We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Today on Common Thread, we're here with some guys from Old Skull, and this is Rory Van Grohl,
Paul Phillips,
Greg Benoit,
Steve Hild,
Bob Stolte.
All right. So, and we're recording this on site in the Old Skull warehouse too, so who knows how this will sound. It could sound like shit, but I'll make it sound fine after the fact. So if there's a little echo or a phone ring, it's because we're in a real, live, bona fide retail environment slash warehouse workspace.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
First of all, I've known Bob and Steve for a very long time. I don't think either of them probably saw themselves owning a skate shop when we met years and years ago. But... you know, why don't we start with like how you found skateboarding?
Want me to start?
Sure.
My first board was like a hand-me-down from my, you know, older brother. It was an old Tony Hawk board, but I never was all that serious or into it. Just, you know, I grew up in a cul-de-sac, so I just skated on the circle, rollerblade, big wheels, stuff like that. I had like a max headroom like locker board from like Kmart 2. So it was like, you know, just like a kid skateboarding around. And I didn't really get into it, and probably until like eighth grade is when Rory and your brother Dirk moved to Fairport, and you had new school skateboards, which I didn't know about, with small wheels and a symmetrical deck. And that's when I really got back into skateboarding, which led me to meet Eric, her former owner here, and Steve, and so on. So,
I on my street, it was really heavy with kids my age, tons of them, which was good because I was an only child. So we were just loaded up with kids, and everybody kind of would go through like different phases. But kind of like my real like first memory is this kid that lived like kitty corner to me that was quite a few years older. Like I'm gonna say 7 or 8 years older. His name was John Hancock. And he had a Sims Lester board, and kind of like a quarter pipe. It was more of like a bank ramp kind of thing that he had. And he would kind of alternate between, he had like a Mongoose Californian BMX bike, which I thought was super cool, and then the skateboard. And I used to kind of like stand out there in like the gutter and watch him and a couple buddies skate around and stuff like that. And looking back, like I think, to them, it was kind of like a little bit, for them, it was like more of like a thing that they were into for a smaller period of time. And I don't think they realized, I had a chance to actually tell him in the shop when he came in years later, that I kind of feel like everything that like really, like the shop skating for all those years, like such a huge part of my life started from just looking over at him. I don't even feel like that it like sunk in with him as much when I tried to like, you know, give him a lot of credit for it. I don't think he was really even like that, like, wow, that's crazy, but that kind of was where it started for me.
I mean, those inception points you don't even think about until much later.
Sure, yeah.
You know, like, that time period was probably, like, so short in comparison to, like, how we see time now as adults. You know what I mean? Those, like, summers are so magical, and then all of a sudden, like, life-changing at the same time. And just, like, it felt long, but it was like so short.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure. It probably wasn't very long. It was probably like the summer or something like that.
That's, and it's cool to like hear that story just in general.
We used to, there was a bunch of kids that everybody at first, like he had that really good board that I imagine he probably got at Samurai or something. And all of us, we kind of like had those banana boards, those hard plastic boards.
Yeah.
And there was a kid down the street, Jason Smathers, and that was when Jamie McMahon came around. It was right in that same period of time. And we used to do like these, the rock walks across the street and have these little competitions. And I always felt like, although like everything came much harder later for me, but that, like the initial like doing rock walks and stuff like that, I thought was like, I felt like I took to it really easily. And, but I didn't even have my own skateboard then. And it was weird because it seemed like all these kids had boards and everything. And I kept asking my parents like, hey, like I want to get a skateboard. I had no idea. I was probably like 7 or 8. And they kept, I think they went to Kmart because that was local, like in Fairport, and they didn't have them. And it seemed like, unless they were making it up, it's they kept saying like that everyone was telling them that they really don't, there's not really like that many skateboards available anymore. Like the department stores didn't have them. But it turned out they actually still were looking for me. And I guess on the same day, I remember this, that my mom and my dad separately, not knowing that they each ended up landing one, came home with skateboards. One was one of those plastic banana boards, and another one was actually wood. There was no graphic on the bottom. It was just this flame graphic on the top. It said flame across it, and it was like sprayed on grip tape. And they were like, pick one of these. And it ended up like I skated both of them to the point like in the first like few minutes that they both were used already. So I ended up getting both of them. So I went from like 0 boards to having 2. And that was awesome. Like that was the start for me, you know, before like any of like the good boards and stuff came along.
Like what year is this approximately?
I would say probably like 85 or 86.
Okay. So like for, because at that point in time, I was like 2 or 3 years old. But my brother-in-law was involved in skateboarding early on, like around that time frame. And he vividly remembers going to Samurai to get a skateboard around that time. Maybe it was a little after that. Mm-hmm. But that's like the first legit skate shop in Rochester, right? Is Samurai?
Yeah, I actually learned after starting our shop when we were in East Rochester that there actually was a skate shop that kind of started in a van before Samurai, like the early 80s. And it was the son of the people that owned Harloff Funeral Homes in ER.
Okay.
And then he ended up having, apparently, there's a garage, and it's still there in East Rochester, I think on Washington Street. The garage of the funeral home was where he had a skate shop, apparently. Huh. And he used to go to like St. John Fisher and stuff and have this van. And that's when Art from Samurai linked up with him. I learned this story like just like within the last decade. Art linked up with him and was like, oh, like, I should do this. And so to all of us, Samurai was the first place, but technically it wasn't. It was this other, whatever it was called. I don't even remember.
I mean, Samurai's where I got my first skateboard.
Yeah.
See, I didn't get involved until like Hard Packed and HORC Hobbies were a thing, and Crudco was like kind of the newcomer.
Yeah.
But if you look back at like the history of skate shops in Rochester, there really have not been very many for a city our size, and probably it's a product of us being on the East Coast that were like exclusively skateboarding, or maybe skateboarding and BMX or roller skating or something. So it's interesting to me to kind of hear about what you had to go through to get a skateboard back then, because it also strikes me as the kind of thing that maybe it hadn't fully been like embraced by the Sears, Kmart, and mail order catalogs that would have like a variety of products like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was CCS a big thing? Like, because that's, I mean, that I remember waiting for that catalog to come out.
Yes. You
know, when I first got into skateboarding.
I think by the time, jumping forward like to, I think I was 9 for my 9th birthday, I believe, like, so that would have been 87 or 88, maybe it was my 10th birthday, I got my first skateboard at Samurai. And I had a track there that I kind of,
CCS.
So I feel like kind of after like the late 80s is when like there was CCS, and I think it was like California Skates or something like that. There was two that were very similar, but their catalogs were pretty cool because you'd open them up and they had like a standard part of the catalog where it was like a bunch of boards, but they also just had like a scene where it was like outdoors and it was like five or six decks and some t-shirts like thrown into the woods or something. So it was cool to look in and just see all this stuff.
I used to love looking in that catalog, the wheels, whatever, all the wheels and the graphics on the wheels.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was like, for me, as a young kid, it was like, let's circle all the boards I want that I'll never get.
That was the first complete I got was from, was a CCS Blank. Yeah. Like the CCS Blank wheels.
Wild to think about. In that grand scheme of things and like cataloging and like, you know, it wasn't even Thrasher Magazine or Transworld that like really spoke to me. It was that that catalog of mail order whatever.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Accessible to my parents maybe too.
Yeah, that's an interesting distinction because I never had a subscription to any skate magazines. It was always just looking at the catalogs because those are free and we didn't have like money for extra stuff like a subscription to a magazine for a hobby. My parents probably would have preferred me not to get involved with. But I guess I want to bring it back to something you said about how like our nature of time changes as we age and how you like can have like, and I look back on my own life and there were like these chance encounters and I would think one of them might be with like you and Standfast and Hardcore, and we've spoken about that on some of the episodes we've done earlier, where it just completely alters the trajectory of your life in the course of one summer, and how I look back on that with like a lot of nostalgia, you know, now that I'm in my, you know, middle years of life, because my summers don't change my life as radically as they did, and I kind of at times wish they would. But I think this is like the closest we've ever gotten so far to kind of the central theme of the podcast, which is, you know, the setup, the elevator pitches, you're at your high school reunion and, you know, what are you up to now? How did you get to where you are now? How did punk rock and skateboarding and kind of these alternative subcultures influence you in ways you didn't ever expect they would to get you to like where you are now? And we've had a lot of guests, you know, they're, you know, business owners are involved, they've done something interesting in their life that maybe is adjacent to punk and hardcore but isn't directly related. And I feel like this, because the three of you, you know, like knew each other as teenagers, is the closest we've stuck the landing, so to speak, to use a turn of phrase that fits with the theme of the episode. And so I guess I'm curious to like kind of bring it up to the point like where you guys met. You know, what was your life trajectory? Like, what happened in that magical chance encounter when you were teenagers or preteens that kind of was the seed that grew into Old Skull Skateboarding and in some ways, like, the Parenton Skate Park, which, you know, when I was a teenager skateboarding in the 90s, that seemed like they would, you know, no government was ever going to set aside two nickels for a skate park.
We tried when we were 15 or whatever, We were on the news trying to get the ball rolling.
Was that when we were 50? Is that how young you were?
Yeah.
Holy cow. See, yeah. Going back to, we all were at a celebration of life on Sunday for a mutual friend of ours, Jamie McMahon. But I have a terrible memory of certain things, apparently. And I thought that was like senior year of high school.
What's that? Where
the skate park thing.
Oh, yeah. That was like early
15,
on.
14, 15.
Yeah, because I remember joking with people talking about the Parenton skate park.
So it was like 95.
I've been kind of working on this for like 30 years, you know? 45 right. Now.
Because I remember going to, I don't want to say town hall meetings.
Yeah, it was at like the village town hall maybe or.
Or Parenton town hall.
I don't remember. I remember the news came and like they interviewed us.
It was a big.
And it was like
petitions.
That's the thing I was gonna say. Like that was for whatever reason. I don't know if we were told, but that was always the big thing. Is that we were? It was always like you had to do this petition.
Yeah.
And get people to sign these papers. Like that had to be it. And I have a feeling maybe we kind of were a little bit off on that. Maybe like, you know, because it just seems like that always led to a dead end. Like you could have 1,000 people on a piece of paper, and still like they were just gonna wave bye bye to us. Right. You know.
Yeah. So like when. Full circle moving ahead from that moment of like 1995 when that was attempted, when we were in high school.
Right.
To like fast forward to Old Skull being in and around Fairport in East Rochester, like, what was the energy like when it became even a possibility?
It was pretty cool. I mean, we literally kind of, we had been around for a while at that point, and we watched several generations of kids come in that would be following that same trajectory of this petition thing and like trying to get something going, but it always seemed like it was like a group of kids and maybe like one of their parents.
Yeah,
something.
Redbird Market.
Yeah.
Like years ago, they started trying to do something too. The same thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think what really kind of helped is at that same time period we started doing these free clinics in the parking lot, these free skate clinics, and just had some stuff set up, and they were very loose. Like we wanted it to be loose because we didn't want there to be like any expectations of how well we're gonna like help people out, but we did. You know, it was like basic stuff, but people really seemed to like it, and we kind of, you know, spearheaded that thing and then kind of brought that as a big example of how much interest there is in skateboarding. And also the thought that the difference between 30 years ago or whatever it was, is that it's not just a bunch of 15-year-old punk kids that skate anymore that are going to spray paint like weed signs on everything.
Right. It's, yeah. That was a legitimate concern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's now you've got all of the parents that used to be into these sports that now, you know, are taxpayers and everything else, and they're bringing their kids, they're promoting it and supporting it, much different than our generation.
Yeah.
And they took to it. There wasn't even really much resistance.
No, I
mean, it was a financial resistance, if anything.
Yeah, but Meredith, what's your last name again?
Brockman.
Brock Stockman?
Meredith Stockman, the town on the town board. Yeah,
she came in, really got the ball spearheaded kind of the thing. Gave us like some, you know, information on how to go about starting it off and doing things and kind of helping us, you know, navigate the ship. So she was a big role. She was a big role in that.
Yeah.
I think her involvement, and just for context, she's on the town board in the town of Parenton, which is synonymous with Fairport, and you probably already heard us, you the listener at home or in your car or gym or wherever the hell you may be, have probably heard Fairport getting thrown around, and that's the locality that, you know, we all have some affiliation with, either we live there presently or grew up there, and it's where Old Skull's located. But she's on the town board, and at one point I think it was like one of the sole Democrats on the town board. Yeah. But I've known her for a very long time, just casually, not like, you know, we're family friends or anything. But her family was very involved with the public library where my mom has worked all my life. And her involvement in this shows how much I think the perception of skateboarding probably has changed in 30 years, because she's not the kind of person I would imagine would be advocating for skateboarders like when she was in high school. She was like a more studious
academic.
Yeah,
she brought
academic.
That up too.
Yeah.
She brought that up. She's like, yeah, I'm the last person you'd think. She's like, until she was on a family vacation.
That's it. Thank
you. All
right, guys. Have a good day. She was in Ohio with her family, and they went to a skate park. You saw how amazing it was.
Yeah. But it also shows, too, because, like, I think the other thing that's happened in the 30 years, and I just want to say, I'm pretty sure when I was in sixth grade, Ian Elwood had me sign that petition.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember him, but I remember that. I think I remember that exact petition circulating around the time it would have happened. I did not skateboard in sixth grade, so I was a huge poser back then. But we've had like Tony Hawk and Pro Skater, and I feel like that was like such a great ambassador for like bringing skateboarding into a mainstream awareness in a way that it wasn't synonymous with like teenagers smoking weed and spray painting, you know, dicks on the side of an abandoned building or something.
Yeah.
And I guess I had, oh, okay. So the other point too was, you know, I go to the Parenton skate park all the time with my kids, and it is a multi-generational thing to me in a way that, like, I've seen hardcore become. You know, like, when I was going to shows in the 90s, you wouldn't necessarily see somebody with their, like, 12-year-old kid taking them to a show for the first time. And that's, like, more of a common sight that you might see at any given DIY punk or hardcore show. But it is really affirming that what I was doing as a teenager actually had some value beyond just the enjoyment that I had in the moment, that this is something that like people can build a community and like a culture around. It's so nice to see dudes that I remember skateboarding at the park and ride with there with their kids now.
Right.
It's awesome to see how many like moms are skateboarding with like their daughters and their sons, because there was not a lot of women, you know, skateboarding, girls skateboarding when I was in high school too, and that seems like it's improved and a trajectory that like parallels hardcore. There's like more women involved in bands and running labels and stuff now too. Okay.
Yeah, you see a lot more like the who is the Alyssa Steamer, what's her?
Oh, Alyssa Steamer.
Yeah, yeah. She was like the only
like pro
female skateboarder.
On Toy Machine, yeah.
And you go on TikTok or anything now, and there's just
Lauren Rigby from Powell back in the day.
Hundreds of women out there that just rip, which is...
Hello, hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am a host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunch Door Podcast Network, which is everywhere.
Cool to see.
Yeah, the sea change of that culture has been huge.
Yeah.
And so I just want to like peel back a little bit. Steve, you mentioned like hosting the clinics and that kind of like driving that community aspect. Paul, were you a part of that? Like as far as like
Absolutely.
Being there, Paul facilitating.
Paul is a big part of it. Still is with the town.
Yeah, I love it. And like, you know, Bob and Steve said, we started, and I remember, I think we had like 5 or 6 kids the first couple in a hallway. We did it indoors, right? The weather was kind of, you know, shitty outside, so we had it indoors. And every week we might get 1 or 2 new ones. And it was really cool, right? And I can remember the day because my wife goes, I think they're shutting the world down. Like, you know, that COVID was hitting. And we had a clinic that Sunday. And I go, it's fine.
Doing it that long.
Yeah, and I said, it's fine. Like, no worries, right? So we had come here, we had set up everything in the hallway. We had, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 kids, whatever it was. And I remember getting home and my wife goes, well, I think that's it. Like, you don't go to work tomorrow. Like, the world is gonna go on kind of pause for a while. And it was really kind of surreal because once we were doing them outside, when the world kind of came back into where we could get back outside, we moved it to the parking lot. And I don't know if it was because everybody was, you know, pent up for so long. All of a sudden, we had one when we came back from COVID, and there was like 20 kids. And every week, it was just like, whenever we did it, I think it was once, twice a month or whatever, we'd have like a whole parking lot full of kids, you know, with their parents. And it was awesome. And I think when Parenton looks at that and goes, okay, there might be a need for this, right? What an awesome time to build a skate park, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the outdoor industry as a whole, skateboarding, snowboarding, everything, especially for us, where we see all four seasons, exploded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it was a hard time. I don't know if you, I mean, you guys can probably speak to this. Was it a hard time, like, keeping boards, getting boards, facilitating, like, even the need for that?
Over COVID?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we got lucky. We just had a huge shipment come in before, right? We get this huge shipment from Santa Cruz. Boxes of wheels, tons of bearings.
We were probably the most stocked on everything that we've ever been. Like, we, being a skate shop, we had probably 30 bikes from Kink. And I remember that was like the thing that I always remember is I only half-heartedly was watching the news back then with all this stuff. And I just happened to kind of look over when they said that they were shutting the NBA down. And I mean, that just stuck with me because I'm thinking like, man, they're shutting down sports. Like, this has to be bigger than like I've even been paying attention to. And I remember I came in and that was like one of the things I was like staring at 30 bikes and I'm like, and looking around at all the like the pallets of stuff that we had just committed to. And I thought, like, we're definitely done. Like, this whole thing, like, we had a really cool run. It was fun. But this is where it all ends.
Were you able to like liquidate those bikes? Because I remember wanting a bike during like that first year of the pandemic. I hadn't had one in a while, and I couldn't get a bike for like less than $1,000.
It turned out that we could literally like paint a rock and we would sell it. Like, everything, everything was selling that we got in.
Yeah, we were like, like you said, this is it, and it was the complete opposite. Because you skateboard outside.
Yeah.
You ride your bike outside. And we'd take turns. We'd have one person here a day, We'd all take turns working a day. And
but we were responsible. Like we could have like one person here shipping, yeah.
Yeah. And it was the best way to describe it. It was a madhouse. And then sometimes you got people knocking on the door. They're like, we just want to come in. Like, how crazy. You know, like that first year or whatever was going on. Yeah, people knock on the door.
And it was like the orders were just, it made perfect sense. It was all of a sudden, like, it was all these components, like rails and like five different colors of bolts and all these different things, because it turned out it was like, it was all kinds of people that just had all this time, and some people had extra money. If you're still working and you got those extra checks from the government, you just start buying stuff. Like, I'll just build another board and look at it, or skate it, or do whatever. And so it was crazy, because I almost, it's hard for me to even, I look back and I'm like, I can't believe that actually happened for as long as it did.
Yeah.
I remember one of us a day, like Bob said, just like packing orders all day, trying to keep up with it.
Building completes.
Yep. Trying to order as much as possible. And it went on for a while. And I remember there's access to the people up front. They have a like an electronic switch company. And this one guy one day, like after like 2 months of not seeing anybody here, like while I was here by myself, he kind of came out and walking around, and he got to like here and didn't seem like he was stopping, to the point where I was like, whoa, like it was weird, like how you're so used to not seeing people. It like scared me. I'm like, stay away.
Right.
You know? And we all had little kids and everything.
Right. And do you think like coming from that like skateboarding mentality of DIY, even like that punk ethos, like spearheaded that, like motivated you to like, I guess we're gonna do it. We just gotta keep doing it.
We had zero choice.
The only like real COVID thing, like, you know, people had like 2 months off or didn't work for a long time. Like, we were busting our asses, and the only eerie thing was the commute to work. You know, 490 would be like three cars. And you're just like driving to work every morning on an empty expressway, and then super busy all day.
Paul, when did you get involved with Old Skull? Were you involved since the jump, or did you come in like after they had established? Because I guess I wasn't clear on that timeline.
Well, what's funny is when I moved to Rochester, Credco was down the street from where I was living, right? And that was like this shop, right? You'd heard about it. And I got to be friends with, you know, a few of those guys really well, like, you know, Aaron and Alan are some of my really good buddies to this day. But it's funny because I've always, you know, I never really stuck with a certain group of skateboarders. You know, I skateboard alone a lot. And even back then, there were a few guys I'd roll with, but more than not, it was one or two guys and generally by myself. And I remember when I'd moved to East Rochester, I had met a guy, our kids were in the same, like, you know, like play groups and whatnot. And he would always ask me, oh, my buddy, you know, do you know Steve or, you know, from Old Skull? And I go, no. And he would always go, yeah, they got a skate shop. You should check it out. Well, I remember driving one day, getting on the expressway, and I see this little shop. And I was like, wow, there is a shop near me. And I let it go because, like I said, I'd known the guys from Credco for so long. That it kind of like came full circle, and my buddy is like, you got to know this guy. I moved to Fairport. He's like, he's down the street from you, right? So we had this mutual friend, and one day I was out, and it was like a festival down in I think it was like Fairport.
Yeah, Canal Days.
Right?
Yeah.
And I started chatting with Steve, and I was telling him some old wheels I had or a board, and he goes, send me a picture later. So oddly enough, I sent him a picture of these original T-bones I'd gotten, oddly enough, for $1 at a yard sale years ago. They're worth like $200 now. They've never even been mounted. And I sent him a picture of these wheels, and I think they were on some music or whatever that I was working on. And Steve said, oh, do you play music? We went back and forth. Next thing you know, we decided to get together and play guitars together, and we started hanging out a lot, right? So I started coming to Old Skull. And through that interaction, I met Eric, and he and I used to skateboard. He probably was one of the only guys I really truly skated with all the time, was Eric. But just coming here and meeting those guys, and then Bob, one thing led to the next, and I had opportunities through them that literally I would not have had without this shop, you know. For instance, you know, they had a meet and greet with Mike V here, right? And he was real cool. It was awesome. And couple weeks later, he'd called me on the phone, Which, you know, my 16-year-old brain and my 40-something-year-old brain is like, holy fuck, like, wow, like, this is crazy. And so I got linked up through that for a little while, and it was awesome, you know. I mean, I guess I wrote it till the wheels fell off.
The street plant battalion?
Yeah, you know, he had gotten, you know, select people in different parts of the world, different countries even, and that were basically ambassadors to skateboarding. That just, if you got people that, I think he would read people, right? And if you got other people that would want to ride a skateboard, more, it didn't really matter how good you were, right? That really had very little to do with it. It had to be if, you know...
it was more your passion level.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. That's the word. Yeah, exactly. And it was real cool, man. You know, it was really, really a wild ride. I met some real cool people through that. And it was real weird, too, because through the pandemic and everything, when the world shut down, and every now and then you'd get a phone call or, you know, whatnot, it was really neat. And I remember thinking how many people would call me and ask me how to do this, and I was just lucky, right? Like, I got lucky. I got picked to do this thing, and it was really cool. But the weird thing about it was when that ship went down and it dissolved, I saw, like, everybody else that was hooked up on this little team or whatever you want to call it, they all, like, quit skateboarding and got bummed out, right? And I won't lie, it bummed me out because I kind of found out about it in my opinion, kind of a shitty way. But I also thought, you know what, I rode my skateboard before this, and I'm just coming out hotter, man. Like, this isn't why I skateboard. It was fuel to the fire, though, because all of a sudden, when you get that association, you're like, even trying to explain it to my wife, like, this dude, like, this is it, right?
It's Mike Vallelis.
I had to learn how to use Instagram. I had to learn how to make videos. I had to, you know, like, and I used to rely on everybody else because I suck with technology. But it was really, it was a lot of fun while it lasted. And like I say, when it ended, I was bummed, but I was grateful for what I had for the short time. Right. You know, I wrote it out, but I'm still skateboarding every day.
You shared the stoke.
Yeah, I did it, right? Mission accomplished.
Yep.
You know, but I'm grateful for these guys because, like, I've gotten to do a lot of real cool things with skateboarding. Like, I still teach through the Parent and Rec Center. You know, I get to teach kids in the summer. It's awesome.
Man. And you do that at the skate park now.
Yep. Yep.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. And it all started with my cousin's garage. They had the little plastic, like Steve mentioned, banana boards. Well, we would rip around on those, and my brother and I, we didn't have skateboards growing up. So we took our roller skates, and I'm probably a lot older than everybody here, but they had a front and a back that went on your shoe, and you could, like, slide them to adjust them. Well, we took them off, and we put a 2x4 between them, and, like, I think we used, like, duct tape or something, and, like, made our own skateboards out of, like, 2x4s.
That was 1964.
1964. I think the wheels were still clay. And, you know, after my parents were like, man, these fuckers are still going back and forth on these.
Yeah.
And I remember going to, like, the department stores and, you know, getting, like, your first King Cobra or my Nash Executioner. Oh, yeah. Dual colored wheels, bright pink, man, I was living. And skateboarding at that time, you know, the cool guys, Johnny Hart. I mean, the name is cool itself, Johnny Hart, right?
Yeah.
And my neighbor, you know, like Roger, you know, they had like Powell skateboards, real pro skateboards. Yeah. And I'll never forget, I was in seventh grade and I got to go on a family vacation and we hit a real skateboard shop. Me and my brother were just like losing our mind, right? My dad and mom let us pick out wheels, trucks, and I had Rinaldi trucks. Again, you probably don't remember Rinaldi trucks. They had a grind bar on them, right? I got blue Powell rat bone.
Like a roller, right?
No, they were just a raised bar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like a raised piece of the metal.
Okay.
And I got some blue rat bone 85As, and I got a Pearl Wellander street board. My brother ended up with a cab. He still has it to this day in almost mint condition. And I remember riding home, and we had them all wrapped up so they wouldn't get scratched. I look at, like, and I go, what a pussy you were, like, back then. Like, you know, like, skateboarding to me, like, I look back, and I had all this stuff, and it was, like, they're wrapped up to come home so they didn't get scratched in the packing, and, you know, the drive home from Florida. You know, I had every rib bone, this, you know, guard, you know. And what a magical time it was for me because, like, these graphics were burned, like, all you guys. There's certain images that are going to stick with you forever. Now sure. It's like, I can't keep up with the pros.
Yeah, Steve talks about that all the time. How there was one graphic for that rider for like a you know, a whole season or whatever for the, I don't know how long.
Yeah, then a full page ad in Thrasher. Guys, Tommy Cheese got new. It was like a big deal.
You know? Now I have like four different graphics.
Well, I think art too is different too. I mean, creating that, and those artists couldn't pump out what they do now with an iPad. You know,
true.
What I mean?
That's a good point. Yeah,
they were illustrating those graphics.
Yep.
But and the plus, the well, maybe the plus and negative side. Yeah, you get more, but is it as iconic?
Not really.
You know, that's a conversation. Yeah. You know, like.
I think
the old less is more kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
It was a big deal when we took rails off our board. What are you nuts? You're going to scratch the graphics.
Or even,
I don't know. I saw the pros doing this.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, or even like when, you know, Bob mentioned New School coming into play, like, you know, having really small wheels, like basically bearing covers.
Yeah. They're like, you know, 50, like 50 or 30, the, 39.
Yeah. The dark time of skateboarding. That's when I started skateboarding, when it was like the darkest time.
Yeah. I didn't even realize it back then, but yeah, those, like, that early 90s period, like, to me, that was, like, a high point in skateboarding for, like, all of us. Like, that was, like, one of my peak periods, and I didn't realize it until later, like, how dead skateboarding was in, like, the rest of the, you know, it was one of the slowest periods. It was kind of obvious to the point, like, where Tony Hawk and Birdhouse videos was skating street.
Right.
Looking super awkward and stuff, but... Yeah.
But it didn't feel that way because we were so enthusiastic about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, like you were talking about Mike V, like just sharing that energy and the community that we had just amongst our friends was palpable. Like you look back at it now, it's like these connections are still there.
What's
and
crazy?
The energy is still there.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think it goes away. And what's cooler, like I said, you know, I met more people doing that I still talk to, even on the phone, like I actually chat with, you know, and it's really weird how many, some of my friends in life, some of the best friends, like including these, all because I ride a skateboard. That's literally the common denominator, is riding a skateboard.
What's that 8th Street video? Useless Wooden Toys?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was New Deal.
New Deal, sorry, yeah.
That was
my
first tattoo, New Deal Sun.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Before we had a driver's license, like Tim Everdyke's dad would take us all down to Parrington Square for the night or whatever.
Or we would even skate there.
Yeah.
You know, like the destination. It was different.
Summers. I remember the summers, like so that 8th grade summer, like either going from your house over to Whitney Ridge, to like you know my parents living in this cul-de-sac there, and then my mom, she worked in Victor. And then Adam McGlone's mom, she worked nights at Woodcliff. So my mom would drop us off in the morning. And then at night, Adam's mom would pick us up.
On the way back.
Take us back home, yeah. We just spend all day in this house.
You didn't even need phones. You just knew your buddies were going to be at a spot. And you had that core group that no matter what day it was, somebody's going to be out skateboarding.
Drop me off here.
Yep.
Drop me off here. Pick me up here. Yep. You don't know who you're going to be taken with or taken home.
Right. And figure it out along the way.
Well, and... leading into this interview, I was thinking a lot about my own history with skateboarding and kind of the skateboarding culture that popped up in Fairport that I was a part of. I'm a little younger than the three of or all of you, but the three of you that grew up in Fairport. But when I got in, it was through a couple friends. Chad Posick was one of them. And that was like one of those chance encounters where if I hadn't made that friendship, I don't know really what my life would have looked like because I found out so much music. And then from that, you know, like my value structure, my beliefs, veganism, you know, kind of all grows from some of these like random chance encounters that don't seem like they would be important. But last weekend, I was thinking about this interview at the skate park and just like how far skateboarding has come, how far Fairport has come. And it was really funny because I was there with my kids. They're obviously, you know, they're younger than I was when I started skating. But I was thinking about how the skate spot that I knew when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, was Qualitrol, which is like right across the street from the official skate park. But that was like the de facto skate meetup place. And the story I had heard was like somebody who was in a decision-making role working at that Qualitrol office had a kid who was a skateboarder. And they were like, hey, Dad, can we skateboard in this parking lot and the guys at Qualitrol can like tell the cops it's okay so we can have like a place where we can go without getting chased around. And like that was why no one ever seemed to get hassled in the Qualitrol parking lot. I don't know if that was like true. That was just kind of a schoolyard legend.
I wonder if that would have just been like after us a little bit, because we used to skate there all the time. I do kind of remember, it seemed like we used to get kicked out if it was like during working hours.
Yeah.
But we always used to skate there like either at night or Saturdays and Sundays and stuff. I wonder if that was, like, I graduated in 96 from Fairport. You said 2001?
Yeah.
So maybe that was like a little bit, maybe like a year or two difference or something. Yeah. Unless I just don't remember the story.
I remember, well, because the Qualitrol is a great spot because their loading dock dipped down and was kind of like a half pipe.
Yeah.
And eventually they put like two curbs, they bolted two yellow curbs on the side down to stop, you know, from us from skating in there. And that's kind of like my last.
We only went in the nighttime hours. Yeah. We were told, like, yeah, if you go after hours, they don't give a shit. But if you go during the day, they're going to be like, hey, you can't be here.
I love the lore, regardless if it's true or not.
I used to love practicing stuff. Like when it was a little bit older and I could, you know, pop ollies a lot higher and stuff, I would practice a lot of tricks up it right off of that dip into the grass part.
Yeah.
Try to get as high as possible and just, you know, just because it was the grass.
Because you can roll. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great spot.
Common Thread is co-hosted by Greg Benoit and Rory Van Grohl with creative support from Rob Antonucci. Follow us on Instagram at Common Thread HXC Podcast for news and updates. Contact us at commonthreadhxcpodcast@gmail.com. Common Thread is a part of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Visit lunchador.org for more information on other great podcasts.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.